Our gospel reading for today was the one that Steve talked about with the children, and the crux of that reading is if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you can do anything. I won't read the whole passage for you because that's the thing for you to remember, but I do have another passage to read for you, and it's from the book of Jeremiah. So Jeremiah 18, verses 1 to 6. This is the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Go down to the potter's house, and there I will give you my message. So I went down to the potter's house, and I saw him working at the wheel. But the pot he was shaping from the clay was marred in his hands. So the potter formed it into another pot, shaping it as seemed best to him. Then the word of the Lord came to me, O house of Israel, can I not do with you as this potter does, declares the Lord. Like clay in the hand of the potter, so are you in my hand, O house of Israel. Hear the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
God, our Creator, Redeemer, and Sanctifier. Amen. Well, I guess you can all tell me if you've been watching the news or reading the paper or just listening to people talk all the bad things that the church is responsible for. If you listen, it's responsible for all the ills of the world. But let me tell you, the church does lots of good things. And the church has, over the years, done many, many good things. Think about who started education, who started hospitals, who started orphanages. We don't need them so much today, but still, the secular society has taken over caring for children without parents. We even support them here, the foster carers. What about art? You might say, what's the church done for art? I can almost hear it or see it on some people's faces. But without the church's sponsorship, we wouldn't have art the way that we have it today. I wanted to show you a slide to start off with. This is Fra Angelico's slide from the 1300s. People have always been looking to have some expression of their faith. People have tried to build huge buildings. Think about the cathedrals that we've got around. They don't need to be so tall. So what's the reason for that? Pointing people to God. Thinking about looking up, thinking about something bigger than yourself. And famous painters also wanted to express their faith. But it was an interesting time, because the people with the skills to paint and make the paint usually didn't have the money to buy all the ingredients to make the paint and to do it. It was the wealthy people, and in particular the church, because the church used to be very, very wealthy. Wouldn't think so today if you looked at our books, but the church used to be very wealthy. And they would pay the poorer skilled artists to paint for them. I'm going to give you some names, and just to remind you, you might have heard of a lot of these people, very famous artists. These people were sponsored by the church. Church was their patron in helping them to paint. What about Caravaggio? I know I've shown some Caravaggio paintings here over the years. Michelangelo, Steve Wachter, Giotto, Fra Angelico. Again. I really never liked technology. What about people like the Van Eyck brothers? Do you know about the Van Eyck brothers? I'll tell you a little bit more about them later. But many of those famous painters, Peter Paul Rubens, all of those beautiful painters were sponsored by the church to do the paintings. I've shown you that one. I'll have to keep talking. Well, I probably will, because the church usually had lots of money, as I said, and paid for the painters. But that was also the downfall. You've heard about the Reformation, when the other churches, which weren't even churches at the time, many of them, turned their back on the Catholic Church. One of the reasons, one little reason, was because the church was spending so much money on art, and in turn was asking the parishioners, or expecting the parishioners, to pay for this art that they were commissioning. It was rather a difficult time. Do we need to have these great big huge paintings? Well, they seemed to think so in those days. And one of the reasons that they wanted to have paintings was that they were teaching tools. People who couldn't read could look at the pictures. Look at the Sistine Chapel, if they were ever allowed to get in there. Look at all the other beautiful windows around in churches that told the story. Around the 1400s, there were lots of icons around, and I know I've shown you this one before, Rudloff's icon of the Trinity. Now you'll notice that it has enough detail for you to see, but it doesn't have shadows, it doesn't have all those sorts of things put in. And it's there for you to look at, to think about, and be drawn closer to God. You forget that it doesn't have all the finer little bits. You think about God. Think about God as Trinity. It was a problem for the artists often to paint things. You think about the mysteries of the church. How could you put paint to paper and show something like that? How could you show a miracle? How could you show something like what's happening at communion? You can show the bread and the wine, but you can't show that other element. So it was often very much a challenge for them. It's interesting that much of our theology comes from pictures that we've seen, the same as it comes from hymns that we have. There's something glaringly wrong with this picture, dare I correct Leonardo da Vinci, but there is something radically wrong with the picture if it's a picture of the Last Supper. I'm going to leave it for you to work out. If you can't work it out, come and see me later. But I wonder how many people would see the Last Supper exactly that way. What about the hymns we have? What about the hymn, "There is a green hill far away"? Where was the green hill at Golgotha? It made lovely sense in the hymn, but it wasn't right. So it's up to us to know our Bible very well, so that we can look and say, or listen and say, is that correct? If we don't know the Bible, we won't know whether it's right or not. I'm going to show you a beautiful window, and I hope you can see it well enough. This is the window in the church where I grew up. That church was built in the 1850s, and so it still had beautiful stained glass windows to show us the stories of God. I'm sorry it's a little bit hard to see. I thought it would have been a little bit darker. Nonetheless, a beautiful picture of the Ascension. Another window in that church is the Baptism of Jesus window. And this, purely by coincidence, is Bob's family window that they paid to have the window put in when the church was built in 1850. So that to me shows a link of faith coming through the family. We've inherited our faith from the family. It's been interesting doing some family history, because as we wandered around the cemetery, where many of God's relatives were buried, they all had beautiful scripture written on the bottom of their headstone or on their graves. And that was comforting to me, to think that this family heritage has been passed on, this faith. But of course, it also reminds me, we have to pass it on to someone else. We've inherited it and we have to pass it on. I said I would talk about the Van Eyck brothers. This is what they call the altarpiece. It probably, by the size of it, would have had to be behind the altar in a place called Ghent in Bruges. I don't know if you know much about it. You might have seen the movie called The Monuments Men. If you've seen that movie, a group of soldiers were specifically challenged to find all the missing beautiful art in Europe before Hitler's people got to it and destroyed it. It talks there about they were looking for the Ghent altarpiece. The only problem is, like many movies, it's not factual, because the Ghent altarpiece went missing long before the war. They ended up finding it, because movies have a good ending, they ended up finding it except for one panel. And you can go today and see it. It's a very, very complicated work of art, and the two brothers had to work on it. The centrepiece in the middle with the squared off edges, you can see that that's hinged on the side to the two other parts, and it should be closed up. When it's closed up, as it would have been in Lent or some other time, there still is something there to ponder. Not quite as beautiful, but still very lovely. I'd love to points to ponder. I'm going to leave you with the altar. If you like, you can sit and watch it. Don't be distracted by Adam and Eve without any clothes on. If that suited the people in those times, that would do us. It's important, though, to know that we have that history, that faith, a faith that's been passed down to us. We have that history, but we also have the job of passing it on. I wonder if you can think about where your faith came from. Who was the first person who spoke to you about faith? That's something you can think about later on during the week. But somebody must have said something to you or done something that encouraged you, unless you were very small, to think about God. I can remember that person being my mother. My mother and my godmother were very clear that I had to know about the faith. And I can remember being about four when the Korean War started. My uncle lived with us and he was sent off to Korea. I was too young to understand exactly what that meant, but I knew from my family that it was something pretty serious. I could pick up those vibes. I asked my cousin what it meant. He said, "Oh, don't worry about it. He was all of seven. He knew much more than I did at four." So he said, "Oh, don't worry about it. It's all right." So I wasn't satisfied with that. And I asked my mother and I said, "What am I going to do? Because I love my uncle very dearly. And how am I going to cope with this?" She said, "You have to pray. Have to pray every day, and that's what we'll do." So every day we prayed, and my uncle came home safe and sound. So that to me was a big lesson in prayer. Prayer is the way to go. But I can remember other people in my journey encouraging me. I can remember the Sunday school superintendent when we had something like 100 people going to Sunday school, back in the heydays of Sunday school. He encouraged, I'm sure, every one of those people. He always had something to say to make us think a little bit more. But sometimes I'm encouraged by family and by friends. I'm encouraged by family because many of you will know that my son is going through theological college at the moment. Now, he's never been a good speller, so ever since he got to high school, he said, "Would you proofread this assignment before I put it in?" And it's a habit that's well established because I still get the assignments to proofread before they go in, and he's nearly 50. But I still get to read them. And I don't mind reading them. I might tell you with spell check, I don't have to do much as far as correcting spelling or grammar or anything. But I think I get more out of it because I read it and think about it. He's keeping up with very modern scholarship because he's doing his training now. He does different subjects, quite different subjects to the subjects that I've done. So I'm finding out about more different things. Sometimes Bob will read them and we'll even have a discussion about it before we send it back to him. But we need to have people like that to encourage us. We can come to church on Sunday morning and be encouraged. But we need to have constant encouragement, which means we need to give encouragement to other people. And we particularly need to give encouragement to the leadership team. They really would benefit by encouragement, even if it's a simple word like, that was good today, or I enjoyed what we did. Something like that is very beneficial. Now, I read from the Gospel of Jeremiah to you. Oh, sorry, the book of Jeremiah, not the Gospel, about the clay. And this is something that God sent Jeremiah down to the potter's house. Pottery in those days would have been very, very different from today. Today we have light electric wheels, you pick up, put in your car, take it home, have a practice. In those days they didn't. They were very complicated things. And pottery was a hard job. It was a hard job, but it was something that was very necessary. Think about the cooking things that they had. They had lots of pots for cooking, for storing, for all of that. Tiles on the roof were often clay. Lots of uses for clay. So the potter was a valuable person in each society. So Jeremiah goes down and he sees the potter, and the potter's sitting there working away at his very heavy wheel. And something's wrong with the clay. It doesn't tell us what's wrong. It could be too hard, not enough water in it. Maybe too much water and it was all sloppy. Maybe it had a little piece of stone or something like that. Maybe it wasn't centered properly. We don't know. But we know that something was wrong with what the potter was doing. So the potter picks it up, destroys it, and starts again. It says there that he had to toss it from hand to hand. Today, there's a machine for things that work well. You just toss your old pottery in, toss a bit of water in, and the machine does all that. But here, the potter's doing it himself. He gets the clay all ready, and he starts again. And he makes what he wants. It looks like in the beginning he's destroying something, but in fact he's making something very good out of it, something that's going to be perfect. And I know that times in my life it's felt like God's been squashing me and squeezing me, and hopefully something better's come out. We haven't got to the perfect bit, but we're moving on, we're improving. But notice, he doesn't throw it away, the potter. Doesn't just say, that's not good, get rid of it. He works with it and he makes something wonderful from it. He can make something wonderful from it if there's been faith there. Faith the size of a mustard seed. He can do something wonderful with that person's faith so that they can then spread it to other people, to encourage other people. We keep coming back to needing to be encouraged. At the first service, of course, we had four readings, and one of the readings we had was the lovely passage where St. Paul writes to encourage Timothy. He tells Timothy, I've seen the faith that you have, which came from your mother and your grandmother. Timothy had been nurtured in that faith. But then he'd been encouraged later on by Paul. And Paul is saying to him, continue with that faith, let it grow, and share it with others. Another reading we had, and when I look around, I think most of you would remember when By the Rivers of Babylon was on the radio on the hit parade. It's an interesting song because it was quite boppy and happy then. But when you read it as a psalm, it's much more of a lament. Here we are, we're stuck here. What are we going to do? And the answer is, encourage one another. Keep encouraging each other and things will work out. I've got a couple of things for you to ponder through the week, and it might very well take you the whole week to come up with the answers, but that's all right. I'm not marking things. Who shaped your faith? Who was it that initially introduced you to Jesus? Do you see it, as I'm fortunate to be able to see, that it's come through a family line? Maybe you didn't. Maybe you came to faith as an adult. Somebody had introduced you to Jesus. So who was the person that introduced you? What testimony or teaching brought you to the faith in God? Was it a particular testimony of somebody's telling you about something that had happened to them? Was it a teaching? Maybe it was a sermon that you might have heard somewhere that really resonated with you and you thought, yes, this is it, this is God. What do you value most in your faith? Goodness me, you can think about that one for a month by itself. What's the most important in your faith? And the last one, to whom might you pass on your spiritual legacy? Who are you going to pass it on to? Now, as I look around, I find there's a lot of grandparents here. And sometimes it's not easy, is it, to pass that faith on to your family? It's often easier to pass it on to somebody else than it is with your own family. I know that. But that doesn't mean that you don't try. So that's something else to think about. To whom might you pass on your spiritual legacy? I'm going to finish with a prayer. You might like to say it with me, or you might like to listen. Holy Spirit.